testing out. I'm Paul Dolan, a member of the Outrigger Canoe Club's Historical Committee. For some time, the committee has been conducting oral interviews of prominent members of our club. Today, it is my pleasure to interview Mark Eric Buck, past president and longtime member of the Outrigger Canoe Club. We are in the boardroom of the club on this beautiful Hawaiian day. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Paul.
Well, let's start with your family. How did you get here? Where were you born and to who?
I was born in San Francisco in 1945 to Frederick Eugene Buck and Nancy Glazer Buck. We moved here in January of 1948 because my father was hired to be a menswear buyer at McInerney Store replacing Ross Sutherland when he went out on his own. We then, around 1950, I believe, my mother joined the Outrigger Canoe Club when they had a membership drive. I think it was all of like about $100 to join, and so they struggled with it and joined at the time, and from that point on, they dragged me down every single weekend and every day during the summer.
Yes, I remember you and the rest of the contingent down here. It was kind of kick. And the nice thing about it, you know, even down at the old club, it was a family club.
Definitely a family club.
And here, at this new location, we've got it. I think it's outstanding. Okay, how about your siblings? What do you got?
Well, I've got an older brother, Mike, two younger sisters, Maureen and Miley. Brother Mike was 4, I was 2, and my sister Maureen was an infant when we came to Hawaii. Miley was the only one of the 4 that was born and raised here. She's the baby of the family. They all now have grown children of their own, so we've got a gang, second generation of club members, 7 strong.
What are they all doing now?
Well, my brother's daughter has 2 children of her own, makes him a grandfather 2 times over.
That's Mike.
That's Mike.
And what's Mike doing?
Mike is currently a radio, not radio personality. He's got his own talk show every day. Been doing it for a number of years. His daughter is between jobs. Her kids are 1 in high school and 1 in elementary school. My sister Maureen runs a business my mom started years ago called The Sample Shop. She's married to Bill Kilcoyne. They have 2 grown children, Brian, who goes by Keikoa, who's married, lives in San Diego, and then Keala, who is a DOE teacher. She's got her teaching credentials and she's at Cocoa Head School. Youngest sister Miley has 2 children, Koa and Kia. They're both college grads. Koa is currently in law school, and his sister Kia just came back to Hawaii and she's currently looking for a job. She worked on a cruise ship previous to that.
Fantastic. Very successful family.
My own 2 children, I might add.
Yeah, how about them?
Didn't want to skip them. My son, David, is 31 years old, graduated from the University of California at Irvine. He's an accomplished athlete in his own, was in the national kayak team for a number of years and been involved in canoe paddling since he was 12 years old. He's currently married to Megan Goldman Buck. They live in Diamond Head area and been married 1.5 years now. My daughter, Shelley, lives on Maui. She works at one of the better restaurants in Lahaina. She's 29 years old, and she's been to that particular restaurant for 10 years and has a little band of her own for other entertainment.
Great. Super. Okay, let's get back to you. How about your education?
I was from kindergarten through the 7th grade. I went to Star through the 6th grade. I went to Star of the Sea School. The next 5 years I spent at Punahou, and my last year of high school at Roosevelt High School, followed by 4 years at the University of Hawaii.
Good. Degree in what?
I was a business administration major, about 1.5 semesters short of a degree when I went to work for my then father's business because of his partners passing away and they needed somebody, and the longer it got, the harder it was to go back. So.
Did you go back?
No, I didn't.
Ah, so that's that. Gee, what, a couple of credits?
About 1.5 semesters, probably about 12.
Well, yay. I won't put that in, that's all right. What about your careers that you followed?
As I mentioned earlier, I went to work in 1967 for my father, and he had 3 retail stores in Waikiki, business that actually was started by my mother and a partner. And from that point forward, I hit the ground running. He spent a lot of time in the mainland, so I was given pretty much control of decisions going forward. A year later, my older brother Mike left the radio business in Australia and joined us. I was still considered the number two guy, and through the next years until 1983, we grew to 23 stores and considerable volume increase. And the business was subsequently sold by my father, the sole shareholder. And I was out on my own with no job, no income, no nothing. I started my own business, which I ran for a couple of years, and decided I was tired of that business. It was a retail clothing business.
Oh, okay. Stayed
in the same business. So in 1985, I got my real estate license. At the end of the year, I went to work in commercial real estate, so it's been a 20-year career there. I'm currently with a company called Commercial Real Estate Services, Inc., and I've been there about 5 years, and it's a good friend, fellow club member, and enjoy it.
Are you a broker yet?
I've been a licensed broker since 1990.
Ah, super.
Yeah.
Get a real piece of the action.
Yeah.
Well, that's fantastic, Mark. I think you've really had a successful life so far. What about the Outrigger Canoe Club? How'd you get introduced?
Well, I got introduced by default. I was a child of a member and dragged down to the club on the weekends with my parents, which was fun for me to learn how to swim and surf. And later on, when my parents started their business in Waikiki, my mom did, we'd pretty much be deposited at the club every day during the summer. And I went through a summer fun program back when Bill Monahan was doing it and a few others. And by osmosis, learned most of the club-affiliated sports, which were then surfing, volleyball, and paddling. As I went through high school, I spent more time playing volleyball than I did surfing, and almost as much paddling. Paddling somehow hooked me, so when I was a junior in high school, I did something they don't allow anymore, and I paddled my first Molokai race, which was quite an experience, because we were paddled. It was 1961. We were there 9 boats in the race. We came in fourth, had 4 teenagers in the crew, and our stints were...
You started off where? You started off where? From where? Molokai race.
Oh, then we started Kawakio Bay.
Yeah.
And we slept on the beach night before the race. Flat going over. Surf came up the next day, and we had to paddle out in our canoe to the escort boat. Other people had to swim out, and we ended up racing into a Kona storm. Our time was 9 hours and 15 minutes, and two of our people got sick, so the youngsters paddled the bulk of that.
What was substitution rules?
Substitution rules there were already open. You could substitute as much as you wanted, but you were limited by your boat.
Platoon system, wasn't it?
Our boat was then, we had 9 paddlers, 6 at a time. You could change anywhere from 1 to 3. We typically would change 3, sometimes 2. Our escort boat was Dudley Lewis's boat, the Le Malia, which had about a 2-mile turning radius, I believe. So we couldn't make many changes. I'm surprised nobody got hurt or lost in those days. The following year, I got actually cut from the crew, and I rode in the escort boat. And that was the first year we saw the Perry family utilizing the 2-boat system, which we picked up on in subsequent years. And now that was up until recently what everybody did. Now they've gone to a faster, medium-sized boat. So that took me through a lot of years of Molokai. 63 and 64, I actually left the Outrigger and paddled for Heilani, because our then coach, Robert K. Kai, after using me and me lasting through the whole race year before, cut me the following year, so I didn't think there was much future here. And there are other reasons. So
sure.
The good part is, by paddling for a club with not the resource of the Outrigger, I was able to appreciate it more, number one. Number two, I was able to learn things as far as canoe rigging and repair and things like that I never would have learned at the Outrigger, because in those days, George Downing or Rabbit, whoever it was, just simply rigged our canoes. And
a lot of politics.
Yeah, politics is a word people throw around. It's personalities. I ended up coming back in 1965. And
you know, George and Rabbit were paid employees, I believe.
They were.
They were paid employees.
They were in time.
Yeah.
And in subsequent years, most coaches got the stipend of pay from the club.
Yeah.
But they were actually almost, up till this year, almost always were members.
Yes.
So there's a lot more paddling that goes forward from there. I'm not sure.
So the total number of years that you've paddled, how many years of Molokai?
I'd say I paddled 33 Molokai races. We won five, first to finish overall. I won five 35 and over and two 45 and over. So I've got a dozen first places. My son made me a calendar one year with crew finishing pictures of every year next to the crew, which I've kept.
Wow. You kept all of those pictures, huh?
Yeah, I've got a pretty good library of pictures.
Beautiful.
Paddling and t-shirts. Every time you paddle, you seem to get a t-shirt.
Yeah.
And through the summer, starting 1967 was my first year being head coach of the Outrigger. And that particular year, we won the state championships. And I was head coach for a number of years. 1970, we won every regatta and the state championships. And during those years, I was up paddling the senior men's crew as well. And we won a lot of races, but not too often the state championships.
With the paddling regime, it seems that when the season first starts off, the club has a difficult time trying to make points at the regatta. You know why? It's because the kids haven't come back from college.
That used to be the case.
Really?
Not that. It doesn't even affect us anymore. It's just a drop in the bucket.
Uh-huh.
There's a long number of reasons why the club doesn't do as well as it used to. A lot of it is legislation against the club by the small clubs and the association, which is a very, very long subject I don't think we should go into right now.
Well, the HCRA was started up by this club, 1950.
I think Bob Fisher was pretty involved back then.
Bob Fisher, Bill Capp, Bill Morris, a whole bunch. Sam Fuller was the first president of HCRA. Woo, fantastic. What was your most harrowing crossing?
I'd say there were a couple of them that come to mind. 1961 was harrowing because of the youth inexperience of both myself and everybody involved, the type of escort boats, and the fact we paddled into a Kona storm.
You were what, steering?
I was paddling.
You were paddling. Number what?
You change seats. So I was mostly probably in 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah.
1966, we had we had won the previous year. We had a crew that was not as good, but it seemed to be better in the competition. We led the race at a certain point in time. We'd broken two of our zippers to the cover, and it was the kind of surf where they wouldn't run the race today. The escort boats wouldn't go.
Jeez. And so small craft advisories then.
It was small craft, maybe almost gale. Yeah. We ended up going down. We couldn't get our boat bailed. So it took us an hour and a half of taking the boat apart and physically putting it on the 55-foot Hulakai boat that Sherry Dowson owned and got it back broken, but we got it back. The defending champ, Hailua, lost their boat that year. That would probably be the most harrowing, other than 1968, which we won. It was quite rough. We were in the lead, flipped over our ama, and somehow got up, got bailed, got going again without giving up the lead, and won and broke the record. So those would be the three most memorable.
Oh, outstanding. So you coached how many years for coach paddling?
I coached as head coach probably about 7 or 8 different years. I'd have to jog my memory, and quite a few other years I'd pick a crew or two and coach them and help out. Back when I was head coach, the head coach had to coach the coaches but also coached a number of the crews, which doesn't seem to happen anymore just because of the way the sport has grown and the number of crews we have.
With the particularly in the Molokai race, with all the foreign crews coming in, do you think you ought to have a division just for the foreign crews?
No, I don't think so.
Get them all together,
No, we've seen one of the few other true clubs that stuck together over the years, Lainikai. They've been able to prevail quite a few times, and basically most of their crew are kids that grew up in that club and are still there, and we don't seem to have that luxury here anymore. A lot of our better paddlers have paddled elsewhere for many reasons, so
sure.
Lainikai is a good club to to look at and try to understand what makes them work better than us at times.
You know, at one time, as you indicated, quite a number of paddlers went to other clubs, and it was war. I know in the case of Fred Hemmings, he wanted to develop the other clubs too, but he got to be very an inner sanctum here at the club, that only certain people could do certain things, as you say, like tying the boats up.
There are a number of different reasons why paddlers leave the club. Sometimes they just aren't good enough. They go elsewhere. Other times they are, and they don't get a fair shot. Once in a while, we get them back. Very often they'll come back better because they appreciate what the club has, and then other times they won't because what made them leave is still here.
Sure. Wow. How about volleyball?
Volleyball was probably my favorite young person sport. I played played high school volleyball the very first year they introduced the ILH, and all my volleyball skills came from the outrigger, from working my way up from the baby court to the senior court. And Punahou's first team, other than one person, were all outrigger players, and we very easily won that year. I played all the way through high school and college, played probably every tournament during the summer at the club I could play in. Got to watch some of the greatest players, both at the old club where they had the tournaments, where the finals were on the B court, because you could sit in the bar overhanging the court and enjoy it as spectators. So that would be, I probably, after moving to the new club, probably 10 years into it, probably by about the 70s, and stopped playing because I found between job, family, paddling, and volleyball, something had to go.
How? You did play in tournaments, though, huh?
Well, I played in tournaments. I played for the Outrigger when a lot of our members, our better players, went and played for the YMCA because they were then sending teams to the mainland. So we had a group that Ron Sorrell put together here with Billy Baird and Peter Bali, myself, and a few others, and played there.
Oh,
and then I played for University of Hawaii when it was a club team while I was there, and I later played for some pickup teams, and I guess the last time I played in, for the Outrigger, we had the Nationals here, and the Outrigger was able to put two or three teams, and we were one of the also-ran teams, but got to say I played the Nationals because they were in Hawaii.
Oh, yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Did you ever play Nationals on the mainland?
No, I never did.
Never did, huh? Yeah. Wow. Because, boy, they're sending them every year, I know that.
Yeah, unfortunately, volleyball is just an aside.
You know, one of the reoccurring tournaments at the Haile Men's.
Haile,
you played in that?
It's kind of like, I haven't, but it's like our state tournament championships.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, volleyball, the way that started the club was in sand courts, and nowadays a lot of kids join to play volleyball so they can be on the team that goes to the mainland, which no longer really has much to do with the club.
Yeah. Well, I know it was a Haile Men's club. Boy, we've got a number of trophies.
Yeah.
Fantastic. We don't even know where to store them anymore.
We have to purge trophies. We did that a number of times.
How about surfing?
Surfing was, I grew up little baby canoes.
When did you first learn?
I first learned at the old club, and I had a hollow surfboard that I had to lift out of the water and undo the drain plug and drain it out, and no skeg. It was a red board, and I'd go out and kind of paid my dues at babies. Then I could move over to canoes, and someday, later on, with a different board, I was accepted over at Queens. The last board I had there was a balsa and fiberglass board that a guy named Ted Wilson made. It was a 10-footer, and just in the early 60s, rather, George Downing brought the first foam boards to Hawaii, and I bought one of those and continued to surf until the transition to shortboards, which,
you know, the technology of boards has just changed so greatly. You see guys doing 360s and the whole darn thing. Man, we couldn't do them with the planks we had.
The nice thing is what they call longboards have come back, and that's what people my age and guys that grew up surfing surfed, and it's very pleasant to do it right here in front of the club.
You know, do you know what the real name of baby surf is?
No, I don't.
Cornucopia.
Cornucopia.
You know why? Because the residual swell from populars comes in and blowhole, and it forms like that, and it hits the peak.
Right, exactly. I didn't know the name, but I know that.
Cornucopia.
The occurrence, yeah.
That's amazing. You know, what do you think of surf ridge?
I think it's unfortunate. It's something that has been tolerated so long. It's accepted and by too many people, and it shouldn't be.
Yeah. Well, I think it's brought about by population pressure.
There's no doubt.
And racist.
It's racist. It's racist. Population. People are. But even local people. I mean, if you're local and you surf in a different local spot, you'll get.
Oh yeah.
You'll get picked on. So there's. Yeah. I remember a story, a little aside. Fred Hemmings, when he was not long after being surf champ and a football player and a pretty strong guy, was out of Makaha, and a couple kids tried to pick on him, and he went on shore, and he was ready to beef all three of them, and luckily Buffalo showed up, and Buffalo said, "You leave this howley alone," and that's how it was.
I know of several cases where the howley guy that went into the surf got tremendously beaten up. Oh. You know, right there.
Happens to this day.
You know, and it's sad. Some more on paddling.
Yeah, some more on paddling is after I was fortunate enough to win a number of Molokai races and see the people I coached all of a sudden paddling with me and ready to push me out of the boat, which is rightfully so. We got together a group in 1984. It was the first year they had the Masters Division, Molokai 35 and over. So I gathered up Fred Hemmings, Tim Gard, John Finney, Steve Quinn, Mike Muller, Marshall Rosa, who I probably should have started with. And we trained whenever we could. We couldn't get a final commitment from Marshall till up on Molokai because he had paddled early in the season with Huinalu, and Pinky Thompson was reluctant to sign his release, which he finally did. I failed to mention Mike Clifford, who was on the crew also. But we started the race.
This was what kind of a race?
This is the Molokai race, a nine-man race.
Oh, okay.
This is the 35 and over, the first year they had it. So we, and everybody laughed at us, said, "You old men won't even finish." And as it turned out, the six guys, I was the coach of the crew, Tom Connor and I kind of put, last minute we got Tommy too. The six people that sat in the boat at the start of the race had never been in the boat at the same time before as that six. Each of us had paddled with different people over the years. The nine men that raced that day had never, ever practiced one day as a group. And we started the race at Haleolono and at Lau Point. On the way to Lau Point, we found ourselves in the lead. We were passed by Offshore Canoe Club, and they got by us. And a little while later, our canoe club's first crew, who was, I'm sure, in shock, got by us. They later on passed Offshore, but we never fell back. So we ended up coming in third overall and won the 35 and over division and created it being fun to paddle in an older divisions. And our motto was, and we won that four more times in the division, our motto was to finish in the top 10, to win our division, and ruin a lot of kids' Sundays.
That's super. That is just super. Well, did you do any other kinds of sports? You know, like you guys are motorcycling, tennis, golf.
I was part of the early group that put together the motorcycle riding group at the Outrigger. Rode a number of times with them. We went up to the Big Island and raced the Mauna Kea 200. I was more of a, I think, participant competitor than I was a serious threat to win anything. Tommy Connor and Kalad Judd have actually won some trophies. I believe Brian Ackerman did. Got to see parts of the island I never would have seen. Fun group of guys to be with. Realized that after a while it was a little bit costly, and when you got hurt there. So
what kind of bike?
I had a number of different bikes. I last had a Husqvarna 430 open bike, which I bought from Malcolm Smith, and I sold to John Finney. So I enjoyed that. I played a lot of tennis for a while, and we had an Outrigger group that played every Sunday afternoon. That was a fun thing. The other sport that I took on to is years ago, when I was in high school, I was paddling Olympic-type kayaks with Nappy Napoleon. And we, in 1964, thought we might have a chance to make the Olympics. We had times that were faster than mainland times, best we could tell. And unfortunately, a lot self-trained and self-coached. When it came canoe racing season, Nappy decided that's where he was supposed to be. And the team we always beat here in the two-man barely lost out to going to the Olympics. Would have been a matter of being there and not doing well, but at least being there.
Didn't so qualify.
But which put me in a neat spot in the at the late 70s, actually 1979-80, when the one-man race started with surf skis. The kid from Australia, Grant Kenny, that won the race, they left one of the boats behind. A couple guys here bought it. And I went out there and watched them and said, can I try? And they said, oh, yeah, but, you know, it's kind of tippy, and here's how to hold the paddle. And they're all, Fred Hemmings, the rest of them were falling in the ocean. So I said, okay. Got jumped on it, paddled out the windsock, caught a wave, come back in, and said, this is fine. And we helped get the kayak started here with Marshall Rose and everybody, and that led to what it is today. Which
now is was that the straight kayak or the OC?
This was the surf ski, and at the time we also started in the later 80s. We started what they call the HCKT, which is White Canoe and Kayak Team, and that was to promote these kids to go and hopefully make the Olympic team and the national team. We've quite a few Outrigger members have been on the national team, and we're amongst the fastest juniors. That has spawned, it's still going today. We in the early years of surf ski paddling, we peaked the Outrigger sponsored race. We had 100 surf skis, and little by little, when they started with the one-mans, they started creeping in, and over the years, we already had an association in place. We welcome them. Today, it's pretty much a one-man association with maybe 80% or more one-mans, the balance surf skis. Surf skis are still a faster craft with the better paddlers.
I'm amazed that the OCs, the one-man canoes have come about the way they have.
Well,
because they aren't fast.
They've just about gotten there, and I think with the number of people paddling them in the competition, the difference is it's still a local sport in one man. If you look at the Molokai, our state race, and then you look at the relay race that just happened, and then you look at the Molokai solo race, which is coming up, you won't see maybe one person cracking the top 10 from outside the state of Hawaii. Whereas you look at the surf ski race, you won't see a guy from Hawaii in the top 10. And the first surf skis will be well ahead of the one man. But the gaps is closed.
Amazing. Cool.
When I was finishing up in college, trying to decide what I was going to do, I had worked construction during the summers. And one summer, they asked me if I'd be one of the leaders or workers in the Outrigger Canoe Club summer program. Back then, it was a neat deal. We taught kids how to surf, how to paddle, how to sail. We worked on their swimming and volleyball. And some of the people who worked with me were Tommy Holmes. Dave Pearson was the head guy. And we had a couple of other people. And quite a few of the kids that went through that ended up being some of our better surfers, paddlers, and volleyball players. We had a good-sized group. We'd take them with the club van. We'd go out to Makapu or Sandy Beach. We'd separate the kids by ability, and we took some field trips. And it was a very good program that unfortunately ran its course because there's just too many other activities for kids and things. But the few years of that program produced a lot of good watermen and good athletes for the club.
Wow, that's super. Well, I see they brought it back.
Yeah.
I think Don Isaac's running the
show. But it's a much more modified thing. Yeah. Ours was an all-day one with lunch and everything. And from that point, I ended up, it was probably the first step I had toward giving back the club. And I then, at age 20, became head coach. And since we had a handful of volunteers but not a huge support system, we formalized the canoe racing committee. Klein Mann was then the club captain, and I chaired the committee and was head coach, which made a lot of sense because both hands knew what the other was
this
doing.
This was a canoe racing committee?
Canoe racing committee.
Canoe racing.
And very often now, it's gotten so big where the canoe racing committee, the representative to the association, and the coach are three different people. I was all the same, and that way I knew what was going on at all three places, and it would be good that could happen more, but it got me involved in the sport. It got me involved giving back, helping out some others, and we won the state championships that year. We won the Molokai race in 1967, where Albert Lemus actually ended up being the coach. I got it started, but it didn't work as well as being a paddler coach. We got into 1968. We won the race again by a bigger margin, so it broke the record. And after that was the first year of the Winged O's. So coming off being the coach and winning Molokai 2 years in a row and everything else, when they gave out the Winged O's, the first one they presented was to Duke Kahanamoku, and I was all excited and cheering, and the next thing I know, they called my name up. So I got this technically the second Winged O they presented when I was a ripe age of 23.
Right.
So that, my presence at the club, I guess, my name recognition and those things, they asked me to be in the nominating committee for the board of directors, and I walked into the meeting and they said, "I'm sorry, Mark, you're off the committee." And I asked why. They said, "Well, we've nominated you." So that was my first year on the board of directors. I was in my 20s and felt a bit young, but if I was wanted, I had the time. I was already spending time down here coaching. I was a businessman, so I understood athletics and I understood business, so I felt I could contribute.
I'm going to save you some time because it's difficult for you to recount all of the years and the positions you've felt. So I'm going to put down the stuff that I have off the database here. When you, what coordinating director you were and all that kind of stuff, because it's very, you're heavy duty.
I was fortunate in my 14 different years on the board to be an officer most of the time. So it put me on the executive committee as well, and I didn't have to serve, or didn't have to, or wasn't required to serve as coordinating director and an officer because of the strain on time. Officers didn't, but we did have special committees like the finance committee and a few others that I chaired that were ad hoc committees.
Yeah. Ah, fantastic. Okay. From the time that you started on the board, I'm looking at the years. The first was 1974, and you finally ended up 1997. My gosh, that's quite a thing. Were there any interesting happenings that you recollect that really stand out?
Boy, it'd be hard to isolate any of them. We had, you know, we had disciplinary issues to deal with.
That's always.
we were only, when I first started, we were only 10 years into the new club. So we didn't have anywhere near the concerns with keeping it maintained as the current board does. We did go through some management changes on two of my times on boards. I was part of two executive search committees. That I found quite interesting to find somebody that can serve 4,000 bosses. We did deal with issues pertaining to athletics and classes of membership and admissions. It got feisty at times, but we also made a few, one formal approach to our landlord to buy the property, and I was on that committee, and we learned that nothing was going to work with them.
I don't think it'll happen, will it?
It's not going to happen until after a renegotiation.
I don't think it's going to happen then.
Well, it won't till then if they know what their status is for the next 50 years, because they only get one shot at us. Then it could change.
That will be interesting.
Yeah. So there was a lot. I was on the board for 4 years initially, two-year terms, and you've got to get off, which I did. Excuse me, I take it back. I was on for 3 2-year terms. I was on for 6 years. And getting toward the end of my fifth year, I was vice president of activities. Another gentleman was vice president of operations. He was also vice president of Bank of Hawaii. Nice older gentleman that totally supported athletics, and something strange happened. One of us was the heir apparent. We're both asked if we wanted to be president, and our responses were similar. I said, "I'd love to be president, but if it's between Nick and myself, I'm young, this is his only chance, you know, maybe he should get it. And when Nick was asked, Nick said, well, between Mark and I, Mark deserves it. He's much more around the club and close to the club. He should have it. And unfortunately, we were never talked to together, and it was decided neither of us wanted to be, and somebody who was below us leapfrogged us. And I guess I got off the board from a mandatory year, and some of the old past presidents and people felt bad I wasn't president. They asked me to come back on the board, and
right,
that was
a
promise.
Again.
And so I, unlike some of the other presidents, I ended up spending my full 6 years before I was there. So when I finished up year 12, I was done. Figured I'd let others serve on the board. And 3 years down the road, my best friend Tim Gard was going to be president. He asked me if I'd come back on the board and help him out just because of our friendship and my experience. And I said I would. I got on for a 2-year term. The first year I was a secretary, and I was on Tim's executive committee. And the second year I was a coordinating director, and felt that 14 years were enough.
What do you think of a membership count? You know, we're almost up to 5,000.
I think
47 something.
I personally feel we have too many members. The count is misleading because of different categories.
The non-resident category is really concerning me.
The non-resident does not concern me quite as much, because unless they're cheating, they can only be here a certain portion of the year. They pay a lot more to get in, which I was opposed to.
Yeah.
They don't have a vote. It's a catch-22. Our previous manager, well, cup manager, John Rader, did a really good job in bringing the food and beverage back and getting people down here to use the club. But, you know, on a Friday night, it doesn't take many people with the paddling program going on and families with the kids where you can't get to the club to use it. And I was at a past president's luncheon where they were in effect telling the admission committee to fill all slots, which I was opposed to. And the quota was manipulated in combined intermediate and regular, because intermediate was never full, and they always moved through, which gave room to bring even more people in. And we don't need the cash. We can use the revenue of the additional dues. But we're now at a point where, from what I understand, a lot of non-residents were living here, and they now have become, some quit, some become regular members, and I think we're at the point where we're going to start seeing a 2 or 3 or 4 year wait to get in. And I was always okay with 2 years.
Yeah.
And then when they accelerate everything, I didn't agree with it. I'm currently sponsoring some people who now are going to have to wait, and they understand.
The consideration of the initiation fees going to the building fund has been a real boon. Do you know what the latest figure is?
No, because, you know, our investments took a little bit of a hit in the stock market 2 different times.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing we've got to be somewhere north of $15 million in that vicinity.
Well, at the Treasury report, at the last annual meeting, $20 million.
Yeah.
In membership equity.
First one I missed in a while.
No loans, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
Membership equity, $20 million.
Yeah, one.
Not too many clubs have that juice.
Yeah. I'd say the big dilemma facing us right now is the fact we have a lot of cash. It was originally designated for the building fund. It was really a land fund they renamed.
Yeah.
And you know, for capital improvements, I see nothing wrong in using some of that. However, I think some of our past boards had the feeling we've got the money, we should be able to spend it. And I was on the opposition side in the very beginning on the planned renovations, fitness centers, etc., both because of the design, the location, the cost, and the concept. I probably can buy off the concept now a little bit. I personally did not join the club, as I kid, any more than a lot of people did to join a gym. We joined a beach club. I am a member of a gym I go to use a gym. I didn't think it was something we had to give to people to recruit them in the club or to keep them. But times have changed, and I've backed off. I think if we can build fitness center and the proper price, I'd probably support it.
I think after the rent reopening, there'll be some changes as to how the building fund is spent. That's a critical.
And I'm sure we're going to do some form of improvements because.
That brings me to the subject of OCC2. What do you think of OCC2?
Well, that's what I was alluding to. I think I think the committee, I think the board somewhere along the line abdicated its control, and the committee, well-meaning, worked very hard, but they didn't investigate a few things. They're bound and determined they absolutely had to do something, and they came up with a couple of different proposals. But the meeting I attended showed that it was far from overwhelming support. And unfortunately, those that have been, you know, we that have supported the club over the years, the older members, say over 40, aside from a few new ones who bought a condo here and want a gym they can walk to, have kind of helped get us to where we are. And you know, it's all these newer, younger kids that have joined the club that are now in their 30s that don't want to spend the money to go to gym. They expect us to do that. A lot of this I can see good. You know, I was rambling a bit, but
that's all right. Yeah. Don't sweat. We can always cut. During your tenure as president, where you really had the hands-on and the purpose of direction, what were some of the challenges?
I think the primary challenge was the business one of keeping us, you know, financially sound. We had the year before taken a hit on our building fund with the stock market, I believe it was the October of 87 crash. So we had to reallocate and redeploy and change money managers and everything to go forward. We then had a manager who had done a good job, but was starting to get to the point where we'd outgrown him, and that was a frustrating thing for me. Got along well with him and worked with he and his staff, but could see the fact that we as directors and officers come and go, and management's always in place. And a lot of people, I didn't want the challenge of having a replacement during my watch, just because I didn't have the time, nor did I feel that it was appropriate, but I could see it was something that was coming. We had a good year. We had success in sports, but you know, it's cyclical. We had some ups and downs. I don't recall our exact tallies. I could look them up as far as the state championships and in volleyball and national, things like that. But we kept going forward. And we had a sound year that year. It wasn't a stellar year, but we stayed the course.
What about the during your tenure? Was there much membership growth?
There was very moderate membership growth during my years in the board, and I thank Peter Balding and a handful of people like him who were very aware and cognizant of the quota. We then absolutely wanted to hover around the 4,400 number, which we've since gone way over, it scares me. But it was almost attrition growth.
Yeah.
Some in, some out. We did some studies that were shocking. Found that of all the kids that joined the club in the 60s, I would have expected 80% would be around. And when we did the study, it was inverted. Yeah. It was 20%.
Yeah. You know, I think jobs are one of the considerations for kids growing up. And, you know, they all want to stay in Hawaii. My two oldest ones had to go to the mainland to get jobs that paid halfway decent.
Well, I'm fortunate. My children live in Hawaii, my son here, my daughter in Maui. But I think what happened, too, is, you know, when you are a child, you almost, by club rules, if you're going to be here more than twice a month, have to join. And a lot of kids and members join because they're almost forced to, and
sure.
So they don't they may paddle a little bit or play a little bit of volleyball, which certainly everybody shouldn't have to do. But there's just nothing about the club. I see a lot of new families coming down here, and I'm hoping that there's something about the club that's going to stick, because they don't seem to be part of the same mold that we're used to seeing here.
Yeah. Were there any other little goodies that happened during your tenure?
God, nothing I can call right now. I'd have to go back and check and see. I would glance through.
All you have to do is take that one forecast.
If not that one, I could just...
I want to enter this stuff. We'll just... Yeah.
Just been thinking. One of the things I did as president in 1988 is I was quite concerned in watching how the committees were formed, and the fact that some of the committees never changed and never had any succession. Other committees, they'd all get tired and leave at the end of the year, neither of which situation was good. So I instituted a board policy that I believe is in effect today, but maybe not always followed. And that was that each committee would, a third of each committee would be replaced each year, which would then give you continuity, would give you new blood and everything else. And I'll never forget, I believe it was George Cook was my coordinating director, and he came to me in a panic saying, gosh, Mark, that's really going to be hard to do with the historic committee because we can't get enough people to serve on it. I said, George, that is a rule of thumb. Some committees might replace 50%, and some, for understandable reasons, like historical, might remain intact. But we need something to inject new blood into committees and to make coordinating directors go through the cards and take the effort instead of just accepting the previous committee. Okay, I think to fast forward from when I was last on the board, I've stayed involved in the club from the standpoint of watching what's going on and talking to people, not wanting to get back into running. I believe it's something that should be passed on to others to do. I feel we've had some good boards and some not so good boards, but I thank all those people for running. To this day, I'm never amazed at how impressed my business associates and friends are that have never been here, that I bring down here. We have something to be very proud of. That's something we've got to strive to maintain. The membership, fortunately through the Historic Committee and through the Public Relations Committee, hopefully can keep all this going. I find myself coming to the club probably 3 days a week, sometimes as many as five or six, depending upon whether I'm paddling or not or what time of year it is. And it's good to see that our current manager is doing a good job. Our current staff, I think, is as good as we've seen. We've wisely outsourced a lot of our work so we can get people, experts in their field, to do it and not have to worry about...